from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of December 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will be along with today's agricultural news. We'll hear from Scott Irwin and his view of ethanol as a component of gasoline, which is far more than just a mandated renewable fuel that the Congress has been taking up for the last decade. We'll hear about the word hedging from Elaine Cubb, and we'll look forward to the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It all happens, of course, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon. Actually, some closes and some settlement prices. From the soft red winter wheat settlements, December contract at 838.5, down 3.5, the March there. 856.5, a settlement price down 4.25. And the July of next year, the harvest month at 866.25, down 2.5 cents. The hard red in Kansas City down 4.25 on its settlement price at $9.17.75. Back in Chicago, settlements are now in for the corn pit as well. December contract 746.5, settled 2.5 lower. The March at 752, down 2.75, and the May at 753, a penny and a quarter lower. July corn up a penny and a quarter at 748.25, and September at 663.75, 2 cents higher. Next year's December at 641.75, up to January beans, $14.55.5. A settlement price there, a penny and 3/4 higher. March contract, 150.25, up to. And the May at 114, or rather at 1428, up a penny. I should read those Jans again. 1455.5, up a penny and 3/4. The March at 1450.25 in the bean pit, up two. The May at 1428, up one. And July unchanged at 1416.75. The August beans at 1391.75, down 1/4. And next year's November at 1314.25, down 3 cents for the day. Bean meal futures at 447.80, up $2.60. Bean oil 16 cents lower at 49.74 on the afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media and comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the livestock settled like in Chicago. Nearby February live cattle at $130.15, 62.5 cents lower. April at $134.25, that's down 60. March feeders at $148.27.5, a nickel higher. The April's run changed at $149.82.5, and lean hogs finished the February 15 cents lower at $85.52.5. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, though they've not cleared out just yet. A northwest wind at about 9 to 11 miles an hour. A high today of 58 degrees. Tonight it should be clear and a low of 33. Tomorrow sunny and 45. Partly cloudy on Wednesday evening, a low there of 31 degrees. And on Thursday, partly sunny skies, a high near 49 degrees with a south wind at 9 to 11 miles per hour. And then Thursday evening, a 30% chance of showers. That'll come after midnight, mostly cloudy at a low of 39. Friday, well, we'll have a 30% chance of showers. That'll continue through the afternoon, mostly cloudy. And a high of 49. Friday evening, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, and 41. Saturday, showers, cloudy, and a high of 51. Saturday night, showers, mostly cloudy, and 42. Sunday, showers, cloudy, and 54. And Sunday evening, a chance of rain, cloudy, and low of 39. And then that rain will continue right into Monday. It'll be mostly cloudy with a high of 44 degrees, so it should be cloudy and pretty wet over the next week. You can get a more complete detailed look at the weather forecast closer to the bottom of the half hour right here on Illinois Public Media. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. This is the fourth day of December, 2012. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
The settlement prices across the grains and oilseeds floor in Chicago from the CME Group were all settled up by the time 7 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock Central showed up. That was probably the first time I think I've seen that happen since they really have been trading till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It must be awful quiet, and volume must be awfully low in Chicago. Maybe you can tell me whether that's the case or not.
It's been a quiet day. The trade was light. I don't think there was any big rushes on the close, and I think that they looked pretty much at where the closing ranges were and settled it on in there is basically what happened, Todd. A lot of, talk this way. There's no real significant news or headlines to trade right now. Most talk is still revolving around the fiscal cliff and the abnormally dry weather that we're talking about, out west and in different places of the country. But the biggest news we got was a little few blips from Informa, where they raised the Brazil soybean crop to 81.4 million. They'd been at 81.25. They lowered the Brazilian corn crop to 66.2 from 66.8, and they lowered the Argentine corn crop from 28 to 27, and they lowered the bean crop to 58.4 from 59.5. And those had all been numbers been thrown around the trade for the last 2 weeks, so that really didn't do much.
So not a lot happening in the trade,
no.
Other than they're focusing to some extent on what's happening on the Mississippi River, and I think they have come to the conclusion that it's wintertime and maybe St. Louis to Cairo doesn't matter as much as they thought. But maybe it does. We'll see what happens with that one.
Well, it does. And, the one thing we'd like to see them do is while the water is down like this is to take care of and blast that on out. Now, there's talk that it might take into March to get that job done, but we'd like to see them get started on that and be going.
Yeah, they need to get started on that if they're going to do that, but that'll take one of two things, I think, either for the president to put an executive order in place, although I'm not sure that it's really clear that that's under his purview. The other would be for Congress to act and to put monies in place, about $10 million, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Although the fiscal cliff seems to be occupying them at this point. We'll see whether they can turn their attention to the center of the United States for that little tidbit or not.
It's probably going to be hard, but it'd sure be a nice 20-minute vote, and everybody take care of it and do that, like I say. So, as we were talking, the one other thing that we are talking about is Rabobank did issue their little bit, and they seem to be predicting U.S. corn acreage will rise to an all-time high of 97.6 million acres in 2013. And we were talking with a lot of guys, been talking to fertilizer dealers, and they said that there's been more fertilizer put on this fall than has been for at least the last 10 years, the most work that they've got done in a lot of our areas. So a lot of guys have sort of planned ahead, and it looks like there will be a lot of corn acres, at least in central Indiana.
Hey, you've got a couple ethanol plants in the area. How are they functioning, do you know?
One of the individuals that works at the ethanol plant was in here about 5 minutes ago in the office checking out price and doing things and says, the Linden plant's been winterized, so it's going to be closed down for a while. So that plant's not going at all right now, and the plant down in Cloverdale, of course, is running, but I think on a reduced pace.
Simply because lack of available corn, I assume.
Well, I would say that that is the biggest reason of all. It's hard to buy corn when there isn't much in the bins.
All right. Anything on the livestock side we had to take up today?
Not much there either, Todd.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Hey, have you taken time to visit our website recently? You probably ought to do that now if you get the opportunity. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report each and every day. And we post it not long after it airs on our radio stations, within a half hour normally. It's at willag.org. If you have a smartphone, try it there. At m.willag.org, or if you can't get to either of those, you can always hear either the opening or the closing analysis and a bit of numbers at this phone number, 217-333-3434. We call that one our mobile analyst portal. Again, the number is 217-333-3434. Next week, I will be on the road with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit, so if you didn't get registered, don't worry. Walk-ins are still available and welcome. It's just an extra $10 upcharge, so it's $75 at the door instead of $65 if you pre-registered. We'll be in Champaign and Sycamore and Galesburg, Springfield, and Mount Vernon. It's the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Check out the Farm Doc Daily website for all the details. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, lawmakers from Missouri River Basin states urged the president to maintain the status quo on river management. The legislative delegations from North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, and Kansas sent a joint letter to President Barack Obama urging him to refrain from declaring an emergency on the Mississippi River due to economic losses from reduced barge traffic. The letter also suggests the president does not have the authority to make such a declaration. A group of senators, congressmen, and governors from Illinois, Louisiana, and several other lower Mississippi River states sent a letter to the president last week asking him for assistance. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner over the weekend repeatedly cited farm subsidies as one type of government spending the Obama administration would like to cut to deal with the federal deficit. Geithner did not provide details on how the Obama administration would cut farm subsidies, but the president's previous budget proposals have called for elimination of the direct payments program, some small cuts to conservation programs, and a modernization of the crop insurance program. The administration has said that a combination of these cuts would save $32 billion over 10 years. The Australian Bureau of Agricultural and Resource Economics and Sciences today says that dry conditions led it to trim its forecast for Australia's main winter wheat crop to 22 million metric tons in the financial year ending 2013. That's down 500,000 tons from its September estimate and 26% below last year's record crop. Darden Restaurants offered a weak view for its fiscal second quarter and cut its guidance for the year. For the quarter ending November 25th, Darden expects per-share earnings from continuing operations between 25 and 26 cents. Darden expects U.S. same-restaurant sales for the quarter to fall 2.7% for Red Lobster, Olive Garden, and Longhorn Steakhouse. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and next week's Illinois Farm Economics Summit. Pre-registration, you know, has closed for those online and by phone, but that doesn't mean you can't come. Walk-ins are available. It's just an extra $10 bill, so instead of $65, it's $75 at the door. You can find all all the details on the Farm Doc Daily website for next week's Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We'll be in Champaign and Sycamore and Galesburg and Springfield and Mount Vernon. Next week, the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You can find all the details online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now up next, you know, ethanol seems to have simply become a component of gasoline right here in the United States. Still, as you'll hear, it's not clear oil companies would use the alternative fuel without congressional mandates. The U.S. government, in a bid to become more energy independent and to protect national safety, mandated the use of ethanol in gasoline. Those mandates will continue to ramp higher until the year 2015 when they cap out. The goals set for ethanol by Congress in reaction to the 9/11 attacks are being reached, and today ethanol has essentially become a component of gasoline. Well, that's far different than a mandate, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin.
So the refiners know, okay, we have to use approximately 10% by volume ethanol in whatever gasoline that we blend and produce. So they know that. So given that, they've kind of basically discovered over time that they have changed the way they operate their refineries to produce out of their refineries a lower octane feedstock for making gasoline. And then they blend that with ethanol, which is a relatively high octane feedstock. And you go from basically a conventional 84 octane to an 87 by adding 10% ethanol.
Let me repeat that. The refiners, most likely reluctant at first to use ethanol, have found it economical to use as an octane enhancer. Octane keeps gasoline engines from knocking because they keep the fuel from detonating at lower compression levels. Higher performance engines require higher octane rated fuels. Ethanol has a great octane number, and by using it, a refiner can lower the quality of its gasoline from an 87 octane to 84 as a feedstock.
And so there are even estimates that the cost of switching back to the old system of basically getting gasoline feedstock directly out of the refineries that's 87 octane would be, in the short run, those switching costs would be high enough that, in fact, you could run the price of ethanol substantially above the price of wholesale RBOB gasoline, and they'd still want to use ethanol.
So let me back up for a moment. Ethanol is actually a fuel like gasoline. It just happens to have a very high octane rating, 113. That makes it a great fuel for high-performance vehicles. Indy cars, for instance, run on 100% ethanol. So it's actually a fuel with a high octane rating. Because it is relatively cheap, and less so today because Congress mandates its use, refiners blend ethanol with a lower grade of gasoline, 84 octane rating rather than 87. Ethanol replaces both fuel and upgrades the octane rating. It's just more economical for the refiner. Well, we don't really know, says Scott Irwin.
I'm not sure I would go quite that far. I don't think that the that we really know fully the answer to that question, because you're basically asking, okay, let's imagine a world where tomorrow the mandates disappear. How would the refiners replace that octane feedstock that they've been getting from ethanol, and how costly would it be to make that switch back to the way they ran their refineries basically pre-2006? So there's real uncertainty on in a no-mandate world, what exactly would happen.
Certainly, the price of gasoline, at least in the short run, might go higher if refiners were to turn their plants back to pre-mandate production. Why? Because of economics, of course. It might be more profitable to refine gasoline the old way and charge a higher price, even if fewer gallons were used because of the higher price.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's time to define a marketing term. Commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cobb, joins us. She believes the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she helps us define the word hedge. Here's one definition: to protect one's investment or an investor against loss by making balancing or compensating contracts or transactions. Elaine, how would you define hedge?
I think that's a great definition, and I think the word that helps me understand hedging best, or helps others understanding it, is the word offsetting. It's the practice of making an offsetting trade that will financially reimburse you if the market moves. So you're right, a farmer may not think of his field of corn as an investment, but it is. He's put a lot of time and a lot of input cost into it. So to offset a growing field of corn, he could sell corn in the future, for instance. So that way, if the market goes up, his sale on a futures market or on a forward contract, that sale will lose financial value, but the cash corn itself will gain value. So you have two offsetting trades, effectively like the spread trades we talked about a couple of weeks ago. You have two trades that one will exactly offset the other, and then you have a perfect hedge.
A perfect hedge, and the hedge is lifted when?
When you go to sell that cash corn, you're right. To be a perfect hedge, you have to instantaneously pull off your offsetting trade, which may be a short futures contract, for instance. And to be a perfect hedge, you also have to have the same number of bushels, which is really hard to do when these futures are in 5,000 bushel increments or 1,000 bushel increments. So perfect hedges are more theoretical than practical, but that's always the goal to limit your risk.
And so a hedge, in all honesty, is trying to limit the risk on the total number of bushels, or on a number of bushels. It may not be the total number of bushels over time, and it is different than speculating?
Yes, absolutely. A speculation is you're embracing risk. You're taking on risk and you're trying to participate in the market as it moves. The more the market moves, the more you gain. A hedge, you're trying to limit your risk. You're trying to lock in a specific price so that no matter what the market does, you know what price you're going to receive by the time you add up the profit and the loss on the two offsetting positions.
Wait, how do you do that? Explain how the hedge limits the risk.
Okay, so let's say you've got a bin full of soybeans right now, and soybeans right now are worth, let's say, about $14 in the cash market where you are, and you like that price, you want to sell your soybeans for $14, but you don't know where specifically you want to take the physical soybeans. So you could continue to own long cash soybeans, and you could sell an equivalent number of futures contracts at $14.41 today. So as the market progresses, let's say next week, the futures market is all of a sudden $15. Your futures position will be a loss. You will end up writing a check to the exchange or to your broker for the financial loss that you have on your short futures position. But then when you go to physically sell your physical soybeans, you'll receive relatively more money for them. So there'll always be one profitable position and one unprofitable position in a hedge, because they're offsetting their opposite trades. But the idea is then that no matter what happens to the market, you will receive the equivalent of $14 per bushel.
That's commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cobb. Today she defined the word hedge. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. In just 2 minutes, I'll return. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
It's National Cookie Day. It's also St. Barbara Day, patron of brewers, hatters, sailors, and storms. On this day in agricultural history in 1812, the power mower was patented, the horse-drawn mower was granted before patents were numbered, and was lost in the Great Patent Office fire of 1836. In 1816, Benjamin Stillman was born, an American chemist. It was his reporting on the potential uses of crude oil products that gave impetus to plans for drilling the first U.S. producing oil well. In 1864, John Fowler died, an English engineer. He invented the steam-hauled plow and several other special-use plows. During a business trip to Ireland, he witnessed the famine, which followed the failure of 2 years of potato crops. He returned to England determined to use steam power to drain land. The result was his mull drainage plow, shown at the Great Exhibition of 1851. In 1867, National Grange was founded. It was the first organized agricultural movement in the U.S. and tasked with uniting private citizens in improving the economic and social position of the nation's farm population. And in 1970, Cesar Chavez was jailed in California for refusing to cancel a United Farm Workers lettuce boycott. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a Tuesday afternoon. As usual, Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, is on the phone line to take a look at the weather forecast. Let's start here in the Midwest, Don. Tell me about the week ahead, and then we'll move out west closer to you and talk about the hard red winter wheat growing regions.
Well, we're going to see at least here over the next several days a pretty mild and pretty nice weather pattern. The system that recently has gone through is moving off to the east rather quickly. And it's going to take a few days before the next real significant weather maker comes in. There's a small system that's going to move in Thursday night and Friday across the Midwest and Corn Belt. Looks like just a light smattering of showers, mainly in the northern areas. There will, however, be a bigger push of colder air coming in early next week. And with that, is going to be some chances, better chances for the Midwest, the Corn Belt, to see not only some better chances of precipitation and colder weather, but you know, maybe a little bit of a wintry weather pattern will be developing as well. This is going to be especially true as we get into the middle part of next week, especially around Tuesday and Wednesday.
Oh, that's just fantastic, because I'll be on the road. I bet that it's mostly in the northern reaches of the state of Illinois, too, which is where I'll be on those parts of the week. How rough will it be next week, or is it just kind of a dusting sort of snow?
Well, put it this way. There is potential with this pattern change that we see, and we are having a really big change in the northern hemisphere taking place in the next week to 10 days, which is going to affect all of the lower 48 to a much more wintry weather pattern. So what we see is the potential is for snow, ice, and much colder temperatures in many areas of the Midwest early next week. Whether or not it translates to big snow, probably not. But that wintry mix with the big change in swing in temperatures, probably what I see is the biggest concern.
Well, what's the driver of the change?
We're seeing big changes in the Pacific, changes that have been very stubborn to develop but have finally taken place. The big stormy pattern that's been bottling up the Pacific Northwest is breaking. And basically, that's like opening the door now to Canada and the North Pacific, allowing that Canadian air south now, as well as some of that Pacific storminess, which has been cut off from moving across the country. It's now going to have that chance to do that.
Last night we had a pretty decent rainfall here, but I suspect it didn't make it to the western reaches of the United States. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's the case.
No, unfortunately, that has been the case here for going on 6 weeks, 7 weeks or so. The plain states, those hard winter wheat areas, really left high and dry. This pattern change, while not bringing heavy amounts of precipitation, is going to lead to some precipitation. I see Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, even some areas of Texas, the Dakotas, having some opportunities for snow in this weather pattern change in the next week or two, even up the next 3 weeks. Will it be enough to make everybody happy? No, but it's better than zero and better than what we've had here lately.
Better than zero is always good. Turn your attention to South America. How's their growing season progressing?
Not bad. In fact, what I see coming here over the next week or so for both Brazil and Argentina is a pretty favorable weather pattern. Temperatures not deviating far from normal, and enough in the way of systems coming through to keep the occasional rain pattern in place across both of those key growing areas.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. That wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.